The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
Come and get one in the yarbo! If you have any yarbo!
Welcome to Area Matters News and Comment from a White Racialist Viewpoint. This is James Hawthorne, and in the studio with me is the host of The Truth Is No Defense, Mr. Jeff Beck. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Glad to be here. It's been a long time getting this together, and I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, good things you have to wait for, my friend. And this is the first program on the return of Area Matters, and we've had lots of email from people asking about the program. And the basic plan for Area Matters in the future is to have a series of co-hosts to make it just a little bit different for everybody.
I guess there's some folks on the forum that maybe you know or whatever. They might want to PM you and see if they can be a guest co-host too.
Yeah, sure. Anyone out there on VNM forum or any white racialist forum who likes the program and has the testicular fortitude to do this can PM me on VNM forum and under the Hawthorne name. So I'm easy to contact if you wish to step up to the plate and have a go here.
Yes, we encourage that. I know there's talented people out there who, you know, maybe would like to get a touch of radio experience too, so don't be bashful.
No, don't be bashful. We need to grow VNM broadcasting. We need more programming. We need more hosts. We need people to step up to the plate, as I said before, and, you know, this isn't rocket science. It's just, as we say where I'm from, you do need a little bit of bottle to do this.
Okay.
Ma'am, we're going to just to let everybody know who hasn't heard the program before, and just to tell everybody that the archives for the previous Area Matters show are on VNM broadcasting threads. You can find the archives of the previous shows. The basic format of the program is really simple. Myself and Jeff will basically talk about two stories that have come to our attention, and basically we'll shoot the breeze on what's called our round table. So anything and everything goes on this program. It's not formatted. It's as it comes. El naturel, as they say in France. And my first story on the return of Area Matters is a story I found in the Norwegian Post concerning the latest poll with regards the organization, the political party that I've been following, the Norwegian Nationalist Party, the Progress Party. A recent poll has just been released, which was highlighted in the Norwegian Post, concerning the Progress Party and the Labour Party are running neck and neck in the opinion polls. I'm predicting that Norway will be the first country, the first domino to fall, that there will be the first nationalist, white nationalist government to take power in Europe. And the opinion poll says the Labour Party 30.6% and the Progress Party 30.5%. It could not be any closer. The poll shows that the Labour Party has the support of 30.6% of those who were asked, and that in fact is a drop by 1.6 points since May, while the Nationalist Progress Party is down just 0.5 points to 30.5%. The coalition partners, the Socialist Left and the Agrarians, are also losing ground. The SV dropped 0.2 points, and the Agrarians, whatever. That sounds like the Green Party, Jeff, the Agrarians, 7.1%. But as I said before, the the Nationalist Progress Party running neck and neck with the Labour Party. So that is really great news.
Boy, in this country, we haven't had an agrarian movement for, you know, about 100 years or more.
Really?
Yeah, it's been a long time. But, you know, I we English speakers, I think we're kind of spoiled. I wish I knew another European language so I could understand what's stimulating this, you know, other than just the general chaos in Western society. But, you know, why is Norway special in this regard? I'm not sure what's stimulating this other than just the normal, like I said, chaos and race mixing and ugliness and the immigration invasion. I didn't know Norway had a large Muslim population, or I didn't know they had a...
Mm-hmm.
We hear these terrible things coming out of Sweden, where the Swedes have been pushed off their own soil in some cases and can't even go in. You know, the ambulance drivers won't drive into, was it Malmo?
Yeah, Malmo,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I don't know, maybe this Norwegians just have as a race, just have a little bit more sensitivity, or as a sub-ethnic European group have a little bit more, sensitivity to this foreign problem we have in our society. I'm not sure what's... It's good news.
It really is. I've been keeping an eye on this. And the Progress Party have just elected a new leader. It's a female leader. And since she took over, the party just been... It's exploded. And the Norwegian population has really just rallied around. And when I say the Norwegian population, the European white Norwegian population.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. That's something I run into a number of people around the world in my day-to-day here in the U.S. And these dotheads and so forth that come over here, I talk to them, and they say, oh, I have a cousin that's English. And I say, what do you mean, English? And I said, he can't be English. Is he from India? And, you know, or wherever. And see, they have so, inserted themselves into our lands and our domain that now they call themselves one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's such a menace. And I really have to kind of call them on that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they don't expect that. And when they do, when you do call them on it, they know you've caught them, because these people, by and large, are so much more racially conscious than we are.
Mm.
James, I would like to tell you a quick story. I happened to overhear a conversation that between a dothead and a Mexican reconquista,
mm-hmm.
and a white man, typical 40-year-old limbing kind of white man, and the Mexican was talking to the dothead, saying, "Hey, guess what? I just got a scholarship to Boulder," and then the dothead says, "Wow, that's really neat." And he said, "Well, yeah, because I'm a minority. I got a position in the college." And then the white man says, "Wow, isn't that great?" And I didn't want to go over there and slap the white man and say, "Hey, what about your son?"
Exactly.
What about your kids? I know you have kids. How can you fawn over this?
Mm-hmm.
And then now here's the kicker to the story. The dothead, this is a female, was honest enough to say, you know, "Hey, that's a card you can pull anytime you like, isn't it?" And there was, you know, silence. Because, you know, I don't know, I wasn't in that area, but I guess the white man, you know, kind of had to look down at his shoes for a minute.
Yeah.
And the Mexican was probably like, "Well, yeah, but, you know, don't say that in front of the white man," kind of thing. And so these people are very aggressive once they get on our soil. And of course, whether it's in Norway or whatever, the legal system tends to back them up, and cow the white man into submission. And so it's really good news to see, you know, the European, you know, somewhere in the European homeland fight back.
I mean, the I've noticed with the Scandinavian countries, not so much Sweden, but as I say, I've been keeping an eye on Norway for quite some time. And I think because Norway is on the outer edges of Europe, you know, that small strip of land. But you must remember that those people are just like, you know, us in England and Europe, Viking stock.
Oh, yes.
And I think the Viking stock and the Viking blood is, obviously it still flows through them centuries on, but I think because of the climate and because of, as I said before, they're on the outer reaches of the European continent, they're a hardy people.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like being messed around too much. And we're with this immigration invasion that's going on in Europe and also in the United States. Ethnic white people are saying enough is enough. And I think what's happening in Europe, I think people are slowly realizing, thanks to the internet, we can bypass the Jewish media. People can just hop online now and they can find the information. They don't get their information now, for the most part, through the Jewish media. They can go to, even if they don't have their computer at home, they can go to the libraries and they can find information for themselves now. As I said before, they don't have to get their information filtered through the Jewish media. And that has been, I think, one of the main reasons why people are realizing in Europe that this invasion is wrong. It's wrong and it should be stopped.
You know, one of the things that might be stimulating this, and this is where I don't speak the language, so I don't know, but Norway has a very rich welfare system for Norwegians. Mm-hmm. And this is something I don't, unlike a lot of Americans, I don't condemn in itself. But you know, if it's for their race, their ethnic group, the Norwegians, you know, let them have it. It's their business.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get these Sheikh Omars in there, they have 10 kids, and they learn how to scam the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Norwegians probably like, you know, Scandinavians and other Aryans are, you know, kind of trusting,
yeah,
and gullible, and to some degree, and they've probably got some of these Mullah Omars in there, and they're sucking the system dry.
Yeah.
And that's probably causing a backlash. And, you know, backlash isn't a bad word. Backlash is a reaction to people who are trying to destroy your country.
Mm-hmm.
And so backlash is a good thing. And so that's probably these stories are probably creeping out. And,
yeah,
of course, there's probably rape stories as well. So it's probably getting out.
Here's something. In England, because of the people in Scotland once again finding their cultural heritage, the people in Wales finding their cultural heritage in Ireland and all throughout Europe, even the English are now, and the English people have revived the very first flag in England was called the White Dragon flag.
Mm.
That's even before the Union flag was even thought of. It was called the White Dragon flag. This White Dragon flag is now starting to appear in England.
That's the horizontal red cross, right?
No, White Dragon is basically, it's on a red background, and it's an actual white dragon.
Oh, I've not seen that yet.
England, when it was a very, very... When all the tribes were around together, but that was the first flag that identified as England, you know.
Yes, even the St. George's flag itself, isn't that kind of a nationalistic symbol?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
you would not see a non-Aryan waving that flag, would you, in Britain?
No, you wouldn't. And what's been happening is St. George's Day now is a really large, thriving, basically festival for the English people. And the multiculturalists don't like it because it revives white Englishness. And these St. George's Days are huge now. Thousands of people have street parties, and it's a really big festival. And at one point, I think it was the British National Party activists, that they put up St. George's Day flags along a main street. I can't think what the town was, but they put up in the early hours in the morning, that they put up St. George's Day flags on the lampposts of this town. And the Multiculturalist Council, the next day, when everybody woke up on St. George's Day, went absolutely ape.
Man, I love it.
They went absolutely crazy.
I love it.
To see this manifestation of white Englishness.
You know, if it's happening in with the English and England, I've got to guess that the other European people are ahead in that respect. Because I think, you know, like England and much of the Britain and the United States, we are the most dominated by the propaganda media that suppresses everything in our people. And I think it's very advanced and very sophisticated in the English-speaking media. And I'm really happy to see that. I'm really happy to see that happen, not in Norway and in England. It's really good news.
Because you can see something's happening, because when European people say, I'm proud to be English, or I'm proud to be French, or I'm proud to be Norwegian, or I'm proud to be Swedish, that's an indirect code word now for being, I'm proud to be white European.
Yes. You can't let the dot heads, the Indians, you can't let them claim that title. I remind them. I reminded them myself. No, you're a British passport holder.
Mm-hmm.
You have a piece of paper. That's it. That's your only claim to being here, is a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And I remind them, of course, in my country as well. I said, I told foreigners, no, we took this land. It's ours. You're here because of a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's blood that earned our right to be here.
Yeah, exactly. Europe too. Blood is the defining issue. Blood is the defining issue, and as I say, I think now slowly, I think the European people are getting it.
You know, James, I'd like to chip in here with a story too, and this one is from the UK. But the reason why I mention it is because we have a situation here in the U.S. A border enforcement process called catch and release. Okay. And that's a fishing term, and where people who enjoy fishing go out there and they catch their fish and they throw it back in the water, so the population stays up and other people can enjoy it. But this is not a sport. The catch and release program in the Border Patrol is where Mexicans are caught, sort of a pro forma process where they go through the system a couple days or a night.
Uh-huh.
Given a meal, and then they're released onto the soil of the U.S. This is a special arrangement for Mexicans only, and they're given a piece of paper to appear, several months in the future at a court date. Well, guess what? They don't show up.
Yeah.
Only like a tiny percentage of show up, and you know, to show up, you must be mentally retarded.
Mm.
And so this is called the catch and release system, and. I was reading a Telegraph article a week or two ago about a fantastic case of catch and release in the UK. And the story begins back in February of 2000 in Afghanistan, where a gang of Afghans hijacked an airliner with 188 passengers, then ordered the flight to Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it amazing how they know to go there? But anyway, then, after a four-day standoff with police, the hijackers surrendered. So here's on Heathrow, here's this airliner, 188 people in it, and there's a standoff with police. So just imagine the disruption this has already caused for all kinds of people and costs. Okay, so eventually the standoff ended, and the men were charged with various crimes related to hijacking and found guilty. The trial testimony showed the men had been armed with guns and grenades. They had threatened to kill the passengers and crew.
Hmm.
Yeah. 4 years later, in 2004, all the convictions were overturned on appeal my immigration authorities, the immigration and my on appeal, and then the immigration authorities ruled that they should be allowed to stay in Britain as refugees.
It's absolutely crazy.
Okay. I'm sure this stuff happens all the time here, but this is such an egregious case.
Mm-hmm.
It's not over yet, though, James. Listen to this. Now we had this thing that happened before the so-called war on terror and 9/11, and this is when the hijacking happened, and then we have all these events, and the subsequent, you know, in the middle of that, we invade the UK, United States, and other European nations, invade Afghanistan in response to 9/11, oust the Taliban. The Taliban, of course, were what these men used to claim asylum, that they would be persecuted by the Taliban. And the reason the immigration court, subsequent to all these things, allowed these Afghans to stay in the U.S. because of their fear of the Taliban. But the Taliban were gone, and we spent millions of dollars to get rid of them. And they still can't go back.
I know. It's crazy.
Gosh.
I call it the Alice in Wonderland effect. What is up and down, and what is down is up.
Didn't this story reappear just about a month or two, James, ago, and it's a very long running thing. And I think it created quite a row with the public in Britain. I try to read the papers over there quite often, and it seemed to have made a lot of people upset.
People were pissed off,
mm-hmm.
to say the least, because these people hijacked a plane, flew it to the United Kingdom, yet the British government allows them and gives them asylum. Now, hang on a minute. Isn't that hijacking a plane right now after 9/11, pre-9/11, or post-9/11, isn't that a terrorist act?
Yeah, it's the system seems to me, James, to have gone off. Of course, you know, we can put our finger on the cause of this, a certain ethnic group that has created this situation with their with these asylum laws and their lobbying. And I know that's the case in the United States, and I expect the Jewish infiltration is as strong or stronger in Britain. So we know the facts behind this, but yet I think the system now has gone so haywire that it's incomprehensible. It's maddening,
mm-hmm.
and I think even the politicians now, they could, even the public knows the situation is so broken that they don't even expect the politicians to fix the situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Great Britain, United Kingdom is not the first. The asylum laws for the European Union is. Anyone who fears for their life in their country must come to the first country in the European Union. I'm sorry, but the United Kingdom is not the first country of protocol. Yeah, they're all flooding into the United Kingdom. And they're bypassing all these other countries because Germany and France and all these other countries have stiffened their immigration laws. But Great Britain has this wonderful welfare system, which, you know, these people just fly on in. Literally, yeah, fly on in.
Mm-hmm.
Fly on in to the United Kingdom, and the British government will look after you while it's screwing the white working people of Great Britain. It's absolutely, it's maddening.
And of course, not so our listeners. I'm sure they're very, very up to speed on these events, general events. Maybe not this story. I think I'm just picking on Great Britain alone. But we here in the United States, and I'm sure you over there have natal tourism. And this is, of course, natal tourism can consist of a pregnant mestizo. Mm-hmm. Or Indian running across the border and pooping out our kid,
yeah.
in our hospitals. Or it also exists with Asians. That's people, you might call Orientals, East Asians,
mm-hmm.
Hopping on planes coming over from China coming over here and having their baby over here. And he's a citizen. And this is the kind of situation that we have now. It's out of control.
Hmm. That's what we need when our governments are changed by us. That's where we need to have to reinstitute or institute racial laws against all that.
Yes. There's going to have to be a dual code system, that a code that applies for whites.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go back to an apartheid. I'm sure our listeners will not be shocked at this. We have to go back to an apartheid system to some degree until we can have a final solution to this problem where laws work differently than for the benefit of whites and to the exclusion of non-whites. And anything less, at least in the United States, somehow a shield went up and no more immigration were allowed, the situation here is already, it's gone past the tipping point in the United States, and it can't be fixed. It can't be fixed without a revolutionary response, and even trying to deport these people, I think, would tip off a war.
Yeah.
And so it's bad. I think is there breathing time in Britain, James? I mean, is it you've got about 50 more years, don't you, or before
2050, yeah, no.
Okay.
2050 is the date when white people in Great Britain will be a minority in their own land. Mm. 2050. If we're going to achieve power democratically through the ballot box, then we have to have a nationalist party within reach of power by 2015. Anything after that, it's going to be it's going to get ugly real quick.
Yeah.
Well, we have all our governments, your government in the United States and our government in the UK and all the other European governments, all these multiracialist governments who are selling a lie. The Labour government, the so-called socialist government in Great Britain, has basically, it's sold the English, British people a package that the multicultural society, the multiracial society, can work. Yet they've abandoned the white working class people who are now voting and supporting nationalist organizations in Great Britain. You know, it's I think the chickens are coming home to roost in Europe anyway.
Well, aren't they really? I mean, and so if I don't understand, I'm a novice when discussing the political situation in Britain, but I can tell you here, and I suspect very highly from what I read, both here and in Britain, that trying to separate these two parties, at least in the United States, is you have to use a microscope to find the real differences in them. You have to ignore the rhetoric, and you have to ignore what they argue about, and actually watch what they do, and what they do when they get in here, in regards to the immigration system, is they both keep the doors open, and
exactly. The Republican Party and the Democratic Party, you can't tell the difference now. And it's just like here in the United Kingdom, the Labour Party, which was once a socialist party, is now basically a centre party, and it's chortling conservative Tory policies now. And you have the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, you can't, they're saying the same stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said before, both these parties have abandoned white working people. And white working people in Great Britain are still the majority.
You know, there's only one, and as an outsider looking, there is no alternative. There's no political alternative here in the United States as far as voting. We have no alternative here. It's a two-party, one-party system.
Yeah.
But in Britain, there is only one alternative, and and I know there's a lot of people who have their criticisms of the BNP, but that's it. I think there's some smaller parties that are noteworthy, that's it. Thank God you have an alternative. We don't have one on a political level, and It's, you know, I listen also to the BBC overnight that appears over here on public radio, and you know they just love to dish up the anti-BNP stories.
We get it all the time. Yeah, especially during the election time, it's an avalanche of hate.
Yeah. I mean it. And the normal person who doesn't pay attention to these things, they tune into this and they kind of pick a lot of this stuff up by osmosis, mm-hmm. and they're kept from considering the only alternative.
Well, as I said before about internet use, the largest demographic of people going online in both the United States and in Europe are white working people, men and white women are the ones, that's the biggest demographic who are going online and looking for information, finding information. And thank God all these parties and nationalist parties in Europe have websites with their own information. People can just go online and read the truth.
You know, that's the thing about people like to take pot shots. Let's just say VNN in this case, mm-hmm. because of some of the foul language that goes on. But, you know, there's a lot of high-level discussions here of serious things. And there's some very intelligent people here on this board. Mm-hmm. And there's others, too. And people are hungering for this because they get the pap. They get the, you shut up and take this flag and wave it stuff. And anyone who disagrees with you is a terrorist. This stuff that's served up, by the various channels here in this country. I think it's I think it's slightly different in your country, but to some degree. But over here, I think that's part of the stimulus for people turning away from the media is because it's been so dumbed down. I think on one level, you have people. You have a deliberate effort to beguile and numb people, and then on the other effort, you have this huge swelling population of low IQ people, and the media over here has to serve them, and more media is created to serve these people who only get kind of like the banana peel slipping on the banana peel type jokes. Or having an ass waved in front of the camera. This is the sort of entertainment that they can only respond to that sort of entertainment because their brain won't really work at a much higher level. And I think that's why people are turning to, in this case, VNN. But there's other websites too.
Yeah.
Even on the goofy left.
Yeah.
You know, people there's Counterpunch in this country. They write a lot of criticisms of the neocons, and they make good points.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're not like we are, but it's a serious publication, and people like to read that. They don't like the boobs and ass all the time, and the mm-hmm. niggers and the gold teeth and the baseball caps on backwards
and the chains, the
baggy pants and people who can't finish a sentence. They don't. They're tired of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. All served up by wonderful Sumnet Redstone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Boy, these people are barons. Yeah. They are just enough can't be said about the evil of that man,
Mr. Rothstein.
Yes. Yes.
My second story on the show today is we're going to Italy. This is Italians vote. This is from the Independent London. The Italians vote on whether to break up the country. Voting began yesterday in a referendum which, if passed, would transform the way the nation is governed and puts a question mark over the future of a united Italy. A yes vote would also make it far more difficult for Romano Prodi to hold his rowdy centre-left coalition together. If rejected, however, which seems more likely, it could reduce Silvio Berlusconi's chances of holding a centre-right coalition together, posing a real and present danger to Mr. Prodi's government. It could also mark the death throes of the Northern League, which is a nationalist party for the north of Italy, the populist party led by, as the Independent calls him, a rabble-rouser, Umberto Bossi, which is behind the reform. This, as I said, once again, it just goes back to the point, European ethnicity of people, the, you know, even in Italy. The Northern League has always been strong in the north of Italy. Basically, the northern people of Italy are basically Aryans, white people, for the most part. And the further south you go, the more the Italian people become more Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
But the Northern League has been it's been one of the largest nationalist populist parties in the north. But again, they don't want to. They want more power devolved from Rome to all the northern states of Italy. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I know in the United Kingdom that the Socialist Scottish National Party would like independence from, to break the union from the United Kingdom, and so would Plaid Cymru, the so-called Socialist Welsh Nationalist. They would like to break away from the United Kingdom. So I'm against that, and I'm looking at Italy as a nation state, and I'm probably against having Italy broke up as a nation, you know.
It would break Garibaldi's heart.
Yeah,
but he's gone now. You know. there is a little bit of coverage of Italy over here because we've had so many Italians come over here,
mm-hmm.
and there's a comment I'd like to make about this, and one of them is on immigration, and the other is on a demographic split in Italy. But I paid attention. The coverage was pretty good over here of the if you sought it out of the Italian election that happened about a year ago, where Mr. Berlusconi was defeated and Mr. Prodi won. This is what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and the first thing I wanted to comment on is that both Berlusconi and Prodi were for basically the status quo as far as immigration.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't any real difference there. As a matter of fact, I'm really not sure what the difference between the two candidates was, to be honest with you. I guess I don't understand Italian politics, but I suspect it's that same paradigm at work as it is in Britain and in the United States, where you have basically a monopoly that you know, and the monopoly shared by two teams that are, you know, all going in the same direction. And so, but I didn't hear any difference between the two, other than that Mr. Prodi, the left winger. Mm-hmm. And what these terms mean, I don't always know, would accuse Mr. Berlusconi of being mean to the immigrants to some degree, although since, you know, to put the right winger on the defensive, right, he had that sort of talking point. But as far as actual policy, I don't know that there's any difference between the two, because Italy is being flooded with immigrants before Mr. Prodi, and if had Mr. Berlusconi won, Italy would have remained flooded with immigrants. So I don't know. And of course, the only option, of course, is a Lega Nord or Northern League, and I'm sure that the same sort of Mr. Berlusconi owns a lot of media in that country, and I'm sure that he does a very good job of making sure that the Northern League are seen as people who are crazy or odd in some respect. But again, we don't speak Italian, so we don't know for sure.
In the United Kingdom, we've sort of devolved same amount of power to Scotland and Wales. Scotland mm-hmm. now has its own parliament, and Wales has its own parliament. I'm in favour of certain devolution to the northern part of Italy, but not to break the country up. No way. Absolutely no way. I mean, European people should be united against this insidious invasion that's going on. And if our countries start to break up, then it's just going to get worse. United,
well,
we stand, divided we fall.
I think that we need to rely on your opinion there on that. Britain had a long history of uniting the island, and it would certainly be a dramatic historical event. You know, if Wales or Scotland, you know, basically said, you know, goodbye, we're on our own, and you know, and besides, you know, you can't shove off because they're you know, you all are connected. You know, by, you know, an island, you're all on the same island. So it would be it really would be something quite dramatic. In Italy, the complaints that when I read Northern League's website is they are complaining about the amount of government money that's been sent to the South.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel tied to a South that is full of mafia, the mafia,
yeah.
And so this is their complaint, and you know that they have a different culture down there, and that you know the mafia is ingrained down there, and that the central government takes money from the north, which is more prosperous, less corrupt, and then sends it to the south, and then buys off, you know, pacifies the south, you know, at the expense of the north, and that's their complaint. And I'm not sure in Britain. Tell me if this is the case or not. But does the British government, Downing Street, do they dole around money to various corners of the island at the expense of I guess the English? Is this something that happens there?
Oh yeah, totally. The Devolution Act to grant the Scottish people their own parliament and the Welsh people their own parliament was taken from white working class people.
Mm-hmm.
Working class people who have been screwed every which way you can think since the end of the Second World War. White working class people have been literally screwed by every that's come into Great Britain. And at last and finally, the white working people have said enough's enough, and are putting their cross against nationalist organizations. It's a good sign.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot tonight about government, and my second story has to do with the U.S. government this time. And I think most of our listeners know just the preponderance of Jews, not only in the Clinton administration, but in the Bush administration. It's even been a greater concentration of Jews there.
I've never seen so many Jews infested in an administration that's infested in this Bush administration.
You know, and it's not only their presence, which, you know, is masked by the media, deliberately masked. We're not told the religious affiliations of these people in the media, but it's the pro-Israeli statements of the president himself. You know, statements basically saying no matter what happens, we're going to defend Israel, and on and on and on, and praising Israeli authors like that nutcase Sharansky in his State of the Union. This guy writes a second-rate piece of political science, he gets top billing in the State of the Union address before the nation in 2000. It was the inaugural address of 2004. He gets mentioned. His book gets mentioned in the inaugural address. And you know, this guy writes a second-rate piece of work, and it's really shocking. But when we don't actually have outright Jews acting for Jewish interests in the executive branch, we have a Mr. Michael J. Gerson. Seeing his name is probably of some sort of Scandinavian descent, as is Karl Rove. But this fellow is described by George Bush as his favorite speechwriter, and he is part of the inner circle for President Bush. an advisor, he has decided to retire. And Mr. Gerson is a Christian Zionist. So not only do you have the direct influence of Jews acting for Zionist interests, but then you have people who are not Jews working in the Bush administration who are acting in the interests of Zionist Israeli Jewish interests. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah.
And there's only one, I think Alex Linder said, there's only one thing that matters today in any issue: is it good for Jews? In our government, and they've made sure that everyone understands that issue, even if they're not Jewish. But let me continue here. This fellow retired, and he made quite a splash in the media. And what's interesting is the media made a big deal about his Christianity. And I'm unaware of when Mr. Wolfowitz retires and goes to the World Bank or Fife or Pearl, there's any great discussion of their Jewish background. But yet, when Mr. Gerson retires, there is a big hullabaloo about his Christianity. And it generally was favorable, because the reason why it was favorable was because Mr. Gerson made it his personal crusade before the president to make multi-million-dollar investments in fighting AIDS, malaria, and poverty around the globe. And he has been a voice for U.S. intervention in Africa, especially in the Sudan. And so this is the kind of people these, in a previous age, they would be called Jacobins or people who want to intervene in these mad crusades that end up, bankrupting nations and killing a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And this is what we have. But anyway, he got the president to sign off on a $15 billion program. This is his own personal influence to combat HIV and AIDS worldwide. Telling, hey, listen to this is right from the Washington Post. He told President Bush that the president would never be, quote, forgiven, unquote, if they passed up the chance. This is the kind of nuttiness we have at the top.
At the very top, at the top of government. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy.
You can't get any relief from these people.
We've got this, Gutter Snipe, who's the new leader of the Conservative Party here, Mr. Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the word Gutter Snipe is a good word for him. Or maybe a charlatan. Or whatever name you can think of this individual, he's a snake oil salesman of the first degree. He's pro-Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He's not only pro-Israel, he's sickly pro-Israel. He's sickly pro-Jewish. He's a bootlicker.
Well, let me say this. Mr. Cameron, the person you're speaking of, who's he running against? He's running against basically Tony Blair. Well, guess what? Tony Blair is a bootlicker for Israel.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely insane.
Gosh, isn't it something? I mean, people just need to really step back. And, I think there's probably a minority of people listening tonight that really don't understand white nationalism, if we can use that term. Mm-hmm. And so you need to step back. It's you that we're trying to talk to, and you need to look at what the fruits of this government is, no matter if Clinton is in office or if Bush is in office or if Blair is in office or Cameron is in office. It's always the same policies.
Yes, doesn't matter. It does not matter who is in power.
So,
with these establishment bootlickers, United States, it funds Israel to the tune of $3 billion a year. Is that correct?
It could be more, James. We really don't know. I mean, I don't know how much. I see these numbers; they come out. They're just phenomenal. And and people like to say, "Well, we give money to Egypt too," but the ratio is amazing. The difference between the two. I mean, it's 10, 15, 20%, 30%, 40% more. And this is probably not even reflective of how much private money from these wealthy Jews, that, you know, own the liquor interests and the media interests in this country. And who knows how much money they funnel over there. And of course, what about the influence they have, in the media, to shape issues, for the benefit of Israel? And it's just, once you add all that up, how much is that worth? It's quite amazing. It's really, we had a private conversation, James, about a week ago, and you know, I said to you, I said, man, I didn't realize how infested Great Britain was with Jews, and I rattled off, you know, Lord Goldsmith and Lord Saatchi and Lord. Can you imagine these people are lords?
Mm-hmm.
The very idea that this alien race has gotten itself in to the class system there and other things, other organs of government, and then are able to use the title Lord. Then James, you said, we're full of Jews.
Yeah.
What about the U.S.? And that's certainly right. We are thoroughly under the thumb of these people.
I mean, the population stats of Jews in the United States, 3%,
mm-hmm.
yet they basically control media, entertainment, and government. In Great Britain, they're 1% of the population. Yet they're at the highest echelons of governments also.
Mm-hmm.
They run the media as well as United States. The BBC, or as I like to call it, the Blatant Bias Corporation. Three Jews run that organization, the BBC. BBC's funded by the British taxpayer.
Mm.
So it's absolutely, these people have control of our countries, and it's up to Aryan white people to learn the information, to get wake up, read books, to get the information and see that what we're saying is quite correct. These people hold our nations. They're controlling our nations. They're controlling me and you, what we can say and do. And if it wasn't for this internet, I mean, where would we be?
Well, how about this, James? I'll throw this one at you. We just passed a 350-year milestone, and our listeners may be curious about what that means in Great Britain. 350 years ago, King Edward I issued an expulsion order,
expelling them.
Yeah, expelling the Jews out of Britain, where they remain until Mr. Cromwell came to power. This is a very complicated situation. We don't need to get into the history of all this, but the Jews came back with Mr. Cromwell in the 1600s, and of course they've remained in Britain and lodged themselves in the very powers of the country. There was an article in the Telegraph where one of the chief rabbis, this was his quote, and this is almost verbatim, he was mentioning just the general progress as he saw it, with multiculturalism and all the other groups that have come to Britain in the last 20, 30, 40 years. He said, the Jews are a great example of what an ethnic group can do in terms of assimilation, but yet at the same time remaining distinct.
Yes.
And that's almost an exact quote. Now, we in the United States, we have a great example of various European tribes coming over here, becoming one people, one European people, basically, and, you know, adopting a common culture from a common history in Europe, a common set of circumstances. But now these people, in the United States, we have the well-known example of the Huguenots, the French Protestants that came over here.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Huguenot culture in the United States. They just came over here and they became American. They became white European people.
Yeah.
But here you have the Jews that have been over there in Britain for hundreds and hundreds of years, and by their own words, they are distinct.
Mm-hmm.
After all this time.
Well, here we are. Well, here we are, Jeff. We've just progressed into our round table, and let me just give you a brief history lesson on the Jewish expulsion. What happened was, even though King Edward I expelled the Jews from England and Great Britain, he was forced by the English people. The English people were getting screwed by the Jew. The farmers were being overburdened, used through the Jews' usurious nature, apart from clipping the king's coins and smelting the gold. It was the pressure from the British people to the king to say, get these people out, or there's something really heavy is going to happen. So the king was forced by the British people, English people, to kick the Jews out, and then the Jews in Holland, the old Dutch Jew Geld, financed Cromwell and his English Revolution.
Well, you had Chaucer a couple decades earlier than King Edward, writing his poetry, talking about Jews as baby killers, and using the British children, as some sort of sacrifice to their Yahweh.
And two of the famous ones was Simon of Trent, and I can't remember the other one at the moment. But yeah, there was two very famous ritual murders. And the finger pointed at the Jews for doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You had, there was an interesting article by Kevin MacDonald, who is kind of in certain circles is called the John Locke of our time. He's done some great work in the Jewish influence and understanding Jewish influence and power in the United States and what motivates these people. I encourage everyone to read The Culture of Critique. But he credits the development of the English middle class, that is, the business class in Britain, to this expulsion order by King Edward, because the Jews got out of the way, and they allowed the formation of a native business mercantile class in Britain that would never have formed had the Jews been there. Because they would have bottled up and elbowed out everybody else. And as you may recall, in Poland and other places in Eastern Europe, that's exactly what happened. The Jews just took over and they stayed there. Mm-hmm. And the Europeans remained peasants. They remained peasants almost all the way into the 20th century.
The Edict of Expulsion is still on the books. It's never been rescinded, by the way. So the Jews in Great Britain are there illegally. It has never been rescinded, the Edict of Expulsion.
Well, that's one. If we could get a real monarch in Britain again, I know that's not always popular with everyone, but if we get a real monarch who could act in the interests of the people. Get some few changes. They, that might be revived.
All I can say on that, Jeff, is good luck.
Yeah,
the royal family, especially these Windsors, are so imbued with multiculturalism. And our next king, Charles, he's quite happy to talk to vegetables. You know,
there is the rumors with Charles that he's a Muslim. That I've come across those, and that it's probably a wild rumor, but I would agree with you about the current crop of the royal family there. If there was a process to get rid of them, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah.
if you could replace them with someone better, that would, if you're in favor of the monarchy, that would be something to do. There was some comments by that I was reading on the forum just today about the Queen of Denmark And she was making some comments about tolerance today. And she said something to the effect that we need to be aware of tolerance, and we just don't... she said something like, we don't need to be tolerant just to get along. There has to be a reason for it. And she also said something critical of Islam in regards to tolerance. So these were kind of an interesting statements.
Just the usual, you know, the usual people in their ivory towers.
Mm-hmm.
If they, all these, like, you know, and the Queen has done it in her yearly message to the Commonwealth about multiculturalism,
yeah,
and the joys of it. Yet these people don't have to live with and in this multiracial nightmare that the rest of us have to live in. I'd love to see the Queen one day go and spend a few months in, say, Peckham, North London.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on, Queen Elizabeth, go and get into that multicultural wonderland that you expose to the Commonwealth every year. Get involved and see what it's really like. People in ivory towers have no clue what mm-hmm. it's like living in this multiracial nightmare.
You know, she's really old enough, too, to remember a time before Britain was, the doors were thrown open. And,
exactly,
you know, she is old enough to remember a time when that country was saner, cleaner, had a consensual, had a society of consensus. And for her to say something like that,
mm-hmm.
Either... You know, either she's being intentionally devious and cunning, you know, she actually believes the propaganda.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know which is which. But, you know, a monarch is supposed to, and she is the head of the church.
Church of England, correct?
And for her to acquiesce to this Muslim invasion of her country, well, that's treason.
Yeah.
What it was that? Is that, well, actually, in religious term, that's apostasy.
Yeah. In the old days, she would have her head cut off, or thrown in the Tower of London.
Yes. Yes.
For abject treason.
Mm-hmm.
So as I say, all these people in ivory towers, it makes me laugh when they push this multiracial nonsense, and they don't live in it, and they have no clue what it's like to live in it. Okay, thanks, Jeff, for being a co-host today on the reinvention or the reinstitution or the reintroduction of Area Matters.
I look forward to hearing more of it too. You know, it's just kind of a cozy roundtable.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a compliment to Goyfire.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope there's more. I heard rumors there was a guest, maybe a guest host from Australia.
Yeah, we're going to be lining up co-hosts on each show. So we're going to try and have a different co-host on each program.
You know, I'll tell you something. I talked with Stan, and he tells me that we have lots and lots of listeners to all of our broadcasts from
mm-hmm.
Australia. And so the Australian secret police that are listening in tonight, you be warned, because people out there are listening to us, and they're turning away, and we're influencing their minds.
Exactly.
So I hope the hits that Stan told me from Australia are just they exceed that are coming from the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest hit is the United States, and then Australia and Great Britain,
mm-hmm.
and a handful of this is what I've heard, a handful of European countries. They're quite strong, and then various others. So,
stay tuned, our Australian brothers and sisters. We have a great Australian co-host coming up on the future Area Matters. Again, I'd like to thank Jeff for stepping up to the plate here and being our first co-host with the new Area Matters program. Thank you, Jeff. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Bye-bye.
And I'll see you next time. And thanks, everybody. DNM Broadcasting, PowerPoint, Supporters, Fellowship Cast. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Vanguard Radio, waking you up.